Welcome to Health Matters Today. I'm Courtney Allison, a senior editor in New York Presbyterian's Office of Communications. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we handed the microphone over to Dr. Vivian Bee, Section Chief of Breast Surgical Oncology at New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital. She leads a team of dynamic physicians caring for people with breast cancer in Brooklyn, and we invited her to have a discussion with her colleagues and friends, Dr. Onyinye Balogun, a radiation oncologist, and Dr. Evelyn Taiwo, a hematologist oncologist. They spoke about their work dispelling fears women may have around a breast cancer diagnosis, addressing health disparities, and serving their community. Here's their conversation.
We are so excited to be here. So thank you for giving us the opportunity and the platform to talk. These are my wonderful colleagues. We all work at New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital and have been building a magnificent breast program, which is a multidisciplinary program. So I am a breast surgeon who focuses on breast disease, so cancers as well as benign breast issues. And I'm also the chief of the Breast Surgical Oncology Department and the director of the breast program at Methodist. And as part of what we have really focused on over the last few years at Methodist in building our multidisciplinary program is to provide a space where patients can come from Brooklyn to Methodist and receive top-notch multidisciplinary breast cancer treatment. And so I always say it's not just the breast surgeon, as much as we like to think that we are important. My colleagues and their specialties are just as important. And so I'm going to pass the mic over to Dr. Onyinye Balogun, who is our radiation oncologist, so she can tell you a little bit more about her and what she does.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this. I am a radiation oncologist focusing on women's health, including breast cancer. And usually people see me after they have undergone surgery. We use radiation or x-rays in order to try and get rid of any microscopic disease that might be left behind that could come back and grow back in a patient. So I work closely with Dr. Vivian Bee and Dr. Taiwo, and I have to say that I'm just going to say it. I think we are the baddest team here.
Bad isn't good.
And by bad, I mean good. I feel very fortunate to work with two individuals who I know genuinely care about the patients and will go the extra mile to make sure that every single patient gets the high quality care that they deserve. And of course, I also think you two are some of the smartest individuals that I know. So to have that kind of partnership is just rare. And I'm very fortunate to have these kind of colleagues.
So the feeling is mutual, Dr. Balogun. Dr. Taiwo, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I'm Evelyn Taiwo. I'm a medical oncologist also here at New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital. So my expertise is also in breast cancer. As a medical oncologist, my job really is to manage breast cancer at all stages with medication. We call it systemic therapy. So whether that's anti-hormone treatment, whether that is chemotherapy, immunotherapy, targeted agents, I treat breast cancer with medications. I'm also really focused on managing and caring for breast cancer patients in the survivorship phase. So when patients are done with their treatment, we follow patients for many years. I basically echo everything both Drs. B and Balogun said about this dynamic team we have here in Brooklyn. I think what's been really exciting is being able to bring top-notch quality care to the borough of Brooklyn. Brooklyn is a very diverse borough. We're trying to make sure that the disparities that exist nationwide, we're focused on finding ways to narrow that just so patients who are seen in Brooklyn are able to have pretty good lives, even in spite of having a breast cancer diagnosis. So it's been really nice to work with doctors who had the same vision, who are really committed to the community, and seeing patients who are also able to, you know, see themselves in the doctors that care for them. I think that's also very important, and it's something special about this group.
I think you hit the nail on the head. And as a next question, I'd like to focus on why we all decided to come to Brooklyn to provide care. And I'll start it out and then pass it over to my colleagues. I trained at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Texas and then was in South Jersey for a little while, and then got the call that there was a need in Brooklyn to build a multidisciplinary program at Methodist. And our platforms are similar for the three of us in that we understand in women's health that for breast disease or breast cancer, there is a disparity that exists. And I think it's important for us to really highlight what that disparity is as we move forward in this conversation. So although Black women are slightly less likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer when you compare them to their white counterpart, they have a 40% higher mortality. It's due to many, many different reasons. And really back in the day, we used to say, oh, it's lack of insurance or the patients are not being compliant. And that is really not the whole story. And so we have found through the work of our wonderful mentor and colleague, Dr. Lisa Newman, that tumor biology plays a role in that Black women are at least twice as likely to be diagnosed with a triple negative breast cancer, which portends a worse prognosis. Black women are more likely to be diagnosed at a younger age, and so they present with more advanced stage disease. And so part of what I believe all of our platforms, of course, provide quality care for all patients, Black, white, all races and ethnicities. But we also recognize that we are three women of color and we have a unique opportunity to really address this disparity head on by being present and being vocal and representing in different ways and being a voice for our patients.
When it comes to coming to Brooklyn, just to give a little bit of background, like I was born in Nigeria. And my whole coming to oncology as a field was because my aunt and godmother, my father's only sister, was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was about 12 years old. And I saw her experience. And unfortunately, she died due to the disease. And she didn't come in as early as she could have. And seeing that whole process as a young child made me feel that I wanted to contribute to making strides against cancer. So fast forward, I was determined to make sure that I did a lot of global health work because clearly we have disparities within the United States. But if you think globally, low and middle income countries have a lot of issues as well. So for a long time, a lot of my work was focused on working with low and middle income countries and trying to do educational initiatives to make sure that they knew how to treat cancer properly. And then came COVID. I've had a longstanding interest in making sure that I give back to communities in the United States as well, but you're unfortunately more likely to slip through the cracks if you are from minoritized communities. And after COVID, I just had to sit down and say, what am I doing to really impact what's happening in the United States? And so I decided to come and put my clinic fully in Brooklyn, and I haven't looked back. Every day confirms for me that it was the right decision because this is a community full of diverse individuals who deserve the best quality care. And not to mention, my Brooklyn population is just different. They sing Saucy Santana to me. I walk in the room and they'll say, let me see you walk, walk, walk. I don't get that anywhere else. So for those reasons, I think for me, COVID was a reckoning point. I'd had a longstanding interest in disparities, but I just wanted to kind of hone in a bit more after seeing what COVID was doing.
And Dr. Taiwo, I think you spoke a little bit about what led you to Brooklyn.
For me, Brooklyn is home. I live in Brooklyn. I've always worked in Brooklyn. So a lot of the patients that we see are people I see every day when I get on the subway coming to work. These are my neighbors. I think it's just the excitement patients get when they see you and the trust that they have when they see you. And there are studies that have been done. This is not unique to Black patients. We see that in our Asian patients. Like we talked about Brooklyn being a very diverse borough. There's a huge Chinese population. There's obviously a huge Black, Caribbean, African population. There's a huge Pakistani population in Brooklyn as well. There's something about patients seeing a doctor who sort of looks like them, who understands their language. There are certain things that you relate to. So I think for a lot of patients, being able to be comfortable discussing things that they may be embarrassed about because they're not sure how you're going to respond to that or how normal it is in the sort of standard community. So I think for me, it's just walking in and just seeing a sigh of relief. Not that they're not great doctors. There are tons of great doctors. And most of these patients have doctors who don't look like them for their general care. I think when you have a cancer diagnosis, there's a certain vulnerability and fear that comes with that. And I think for patients walking in and seeing a doctor who they think understands them just a little bit more takes some of that fear away. So I think this is sort of the general sense that I get. It's just relief for patients. And then the fact that you're a woman, right? Breast cancer affects men too, but it's predominantly women. So I think it's walking in, you're a female doctor, that means something to a lot of patients. And then you're a woman of color for our patients that are of color. So it's a wonderful thing in terms of just going back to our team of a female surgeon, a female radiation oncologist, a female medical oncologist. But there's just something about all our patients in general, regardless of their race, ethnicity, or where they're from, that walking in and seeing a woman is just cool. It's a sigh of relief for a lot of our patients.
Yeah, I would agree completely. And just speaking about the impact of having representation, another sort of example is from the time we formed our partnership and collaboration in building the multidisciplinary program. Even when you look at clinical trial accrual, we know nationwide minority clinical trial accrual is low. There are many reasons why that is. There's medical mistrust. There are biases. There's discrimination. But if you look at our numbers, I think it speaks to the fact that we try to remove the biases. We try to educate patients. We try to be their voice. We try to give it to them as it is. And I think our patients realize that and they appreciate that. And so while nationwide clinical trial accrual is low for minority patients, within our program, at least, we are seeing an uprise in clinical trial accrual. And so I thank you, ladies, because I know it's a daily thing. It's a conscious effort to remove that bias and to provide the necessary tools for patients to make an informed decision.
You're not going to toot your own horn. You're too humble, but I will toot it. Okay. So I've seen the numbers. 40%, right, of the clinical trial participants are Black women. I don't know that you will go anywhere else in the United States and see that. And granted, yes, we do see a significant population of Black women, but it's not that it translates so easily. Oh, because they're Black women in your clinic, that they're going to be part of your trial. If you look around at clinical trials, Black enrollment is usually single digits, right? Single digits. And here in Brooklyn, we have 40%. So that's us working together. I really love that we have a tumor board where every new patient gets presented and we list out what are all the potential trials, which are they eligible for? And as a group, we have that discussion and that takes out the bias. Frequently in clinical trials, the issue isn't necessarily just distrust. People frequently talk about Tuskegee, Henrietta Lacks, that history and ongoing egregious acts that make people, especially the Black or African-American individuals, wary of participating in clinical trials. But frequently, I think some studies put it as high as 60% of people are not even offered the clinical trial. So for us as a group to take out that bias, to sit down together and say, just what is this person eligible for? We may discuss what might be barriers to them participating, but we offer them, which is always the first step. I'm excited to be a part of something that I think is quite distinct from what you would see in the rest of the country.
Yeah, and I would say it is inspiring, right? Again, this is why I love that you were my colleagues because it's interesting when you work with people who have similar goals and they understand, right? It takes away that first, most important initial step. And so we have really been able to work together. So I'm going to ask the next question in breast cancer treatment within our individual specialties. for either one of you, what makes you hopeful about the treatment of breast cancer for our patients?
Oh my gosh, there is definitely a lot to be hopeful about. Just even thinking about how we treated breast cancer patients when I was a fellow to how we treat certain breast cancer types now, just looking at the survival, even in patients that have metastatic, which is stage four, which generally is the stage that is the most fearful for people. And just looking at the data and seeing how we've doubled survival, having patients that are metastatic at year 10. I remember when I was in training, if a patient was HER2-new positive, that was bad prognosis. And now that is actually considered positive. We're downstaging patients who are HER2 positive because we have drugs that are targeting these receptors, going from a time where most patients will get chemotherapy if they had lymph node positive disease to having technologies and molecular ways of really trying to identify patients who need chemotherapy and those who don't. So we're really doing a better job at not over-treating patients, not exposing patients to therapies and toxicities if it's not necessary. And just seeing that progress in 10 years, in 5 years, you're constantly learning. It's very humbling in a very wonderful way. So for me, we can go on from like diagnosis, molecular testing, to immunotherapy, to targeted agents, to endocrine therapies. I mean, I'm a total nerd, so I could talk about this for hours. So we're not going to do that, right? The medical oncologists are the nerds. We're not the surgeons who are like the really cool ones. They walk into the OR with their scalpel. I just show up with tons of medications.
I think you're cool, Evelyn. In my field, I echo the same sentiments. It's so exciting. Just from when I started training to now, so many things have changed. So when it comes to breast cancer, for instance, we have better technologies because some people come, and I think radiation is probably the field that's very mysterious for people. And when they hear about radiation, they're usually thinking about things like Fukushima or Chernobyl, things that are just like radiation equals bad for most people. But part of my job is to just educate people that we've figured out how to harness radiation so that it can lead to cures and also for relieving symptoms in people who maybe have widespread disease but are having pain or bleeding. We can help in those instances as well. When radiation initially began, we treated very simple shapes, this square box, this rectangle. It was not very complex. And as time goes on, our technology has changed so that we can create more complex shapes. We can mimic the outline of someone's body so that we can avoid their lungs, their heart, most importantly, and other normal organs. So I tell people, this is not your mama's radiation. And then the other things that are coming out are looking at radiation in combination with other drugs. I'm very excited to see how radiation can maybe combine with other drugs to make the effects even greater in terms of shrinking tumors and keeping disease away. And then finally, we're also looking at elimination of radiation in some instances. So there's a test that's done called the Oncotype test. Basically, they take a sample of the tumor and they look at what are different proteins that are being created inside of this tumor. And we've basically done trials and studies to figure out, okay, if this person has these mixture of proteins, they're more likely to need chemotherapy or to get a benefit from chemotherapy. And now we're looking at that for radiation to see, even if someone has a breast cancer that went to their lymph nodes, usually we say treat all the lymph nodes, treat the whole entire breast and chest wall. Now we're saying, hold on, do people really need it if maybe they only have 1, 2, 3 positive lymph nodes? And we're using these tests to figure it out. So if we can avoid radiation in some instances, avoid the side effects, I'm excited to see the field move in that direction. Because I always say my job is not to just give radiation. It's to make sure that we're giving the right treatment that's needed.
Yeah. And I always say to my patients as a surgeon, I treat your breast and your lymph nodes, which are underneath your armpit. And for both, over the last few decades, we have moved from mastectomy for all patients radical mastectomy, which is extensive surgery for all patients, to lumpectomy. And now, much like radiation, talking about, well, wait a second, are there patients who we could reasonably avoid surgery for? Now, we're not there yet, but the questions are being asked, which is always exciting. And then for the axilla, or those lymph nodes underneath the armpit, we went from every cancer, small or large, we had to remove all the lymph nodes underneath the armpit. And then we realized that, wait a minute, that can cause lymphedema or swelling in the arm. And is there a way for us to limit the need for staging the axilla? And then came some of our landmark trials, the Z11 trial, that said for patients who don't have clinically positive disease, we could reasonably just remove a few lymph nodes and then go from there. So we're all thrilled to take care of our patients. And we recognize that it's a journey that no patient has asked for. And we take it seriously by staying on top of the latest data and shifts within our specialty. So my next question, though, is it's important to get patients to a multidisciplinary program. What community outreach and engagement opportunities have we undertaken to really meet patients where they are, to meet the community women such that we can diagnose them and get them the treatment that they need and deserve?
I think what's really important is being out there in the community like we already are. I think communicating with providers, primary care physicians, because we know primary care physicians have a lot of input. Patients trust their primary care doctors. They see them regularly, right? They see specialists when they need to. So I think just sort of partnering up with this providers in the community, something that's very important that we've been doing. I think the one thing for me is really just demystifying what it means to be in a clinical trial. We talk about triple negative breast cancer being the most aggressive form of breast cancer that we see a lot in African-American women. And when you look at the clinical trials where, like Dr. Balogun said, you have 8% being African-American women included in studies trying to investigate disease that affects a community. And most patients included in the clinical trials are actually not the people that are actually affected the most. So I think just really communicating with providers so they also become more comfortable having those conversations with their patients and just demystifying what it means. It's important for patients to know that they're not being experimented on. They're not being used as guinea pigs. Patients that are included in clinical trials actually tend to do better, tend to get better care. So I tell everyone the first question you should be asking is there a clinical trial available for the type of cancer that I have? I mean, not everyone needs to be on a clinical trial. Sometimes it's like, oh, you know, your kind of cancer is pretty routine, pretty standard. We know what to do with this, but at least that question should be asked. And being at an institution where the ability to enroll in a clinical trial is available, I think is very important, which is where we come in, where you have multi-D programs, but also just the ease of getting patients in clinical trials here or to places where they exist. I can't emphasize that enough.
For Brooklyn, what we have done, we actually have a grant that supports community outreach and engagement for Black women in the community and in collaboration with women in Camden, New Jersey. It's a multi-tier grant. And one of the opportunities that we've had is to really provide education to, actually, we started with women in the church. And so we had navigators within Black churches that we identified, and we taught them about the importance of getting a mammogram. Because you have to really start there, a screening mammogram, because we really would like to catch cancer on a screening mammogram as opposed to someone feeling a mass. We also realize that COVID has wreaked havoc on the system, whereas, you know, someone may have been going to get their mammogram every year, but guess what? Last year, when we had our first peak in New York, you know, there were recommendations to stop mammography screening. And certainly the institutions across New York and the country were overwhelmed. And so there are some women who still have not gotten their yearly mammogram and maybe going on 2 years. And so we are concerned about those women. And so we are conducting actually surveys and focus groups to better understand how we can improve access for these women. What are the issues now? Did they lose their job and now they don't have insurance and they're concerned about that? And how can we help sort of bridge that gap so that we can, you know, narrow the disparities that we are concerned are going to actually widen due to COVID-19? So this is just a little bit of what we're doing in the community as a group. I know, Dr. Malagon, you've done some internet international work. What is your wish for the future as it relates to women's health and helping eliminate disparities?
My wish, I think, is pretty simple. I want every woman, regardless of race or ethnicity, to be able to walk into a clinic and know that she's getting high quality evidence-based care. I think that's just what makes sense. That's what we're striving for every day. I don't want it to be dependent on the race of her physician, the ethnicity of her physician, or of the woman who's going into the clinic. That's just what I'm hoping for. And I think the way that we get there is by having discussions like this. The reckoning that happened in this country with Black Lives Matter, I think, has started a big conversation regarding why are there healthcare disparities? Why are there other issues in society? But as it pertains to healthcare, my hope is that we would move closer to having women just know that across the board, they're going to get excellent care. And as it pertains to Brooklyn, what I'm hoping is that when we look at our outcomes, maybe over the next 10 years, what we're seeing are equitable outcomes for all women, all races, all ethnicities, religion, gender, sexual orientation. That's the utopia I'm looking for.
I think that that was well said, Dr. Taiwo.
You know, everything is a work in progress, but I think just full access to high quality care, regardless of your income status, regardless of where you live. Another thing that's very important to me is just also us as physicians, all physicians, being aware of our own unconscious biases and how we sometimes sort of kind of make decisions based on who and what you think your patient is and not standardizing care, right? I think once things are standardized, which is what we've been doing with our multi-D clinics and our tumor boards, then you just take all of that out and you just go down the list. What is standard? Has that been applied in this case? And we're not making decisions for patients. So I think it goes both ways, what we want for our patients and then what we want for our field. As physicians, we're very important in terms of how this country operates, and bringing health equity is really contributing to overall equity in the country. So that is something that I'm passionate about, just trying to get my colleagues, our colleagues. We all need to check ourselves, myself included. So
absolutely. And just to hone in on the point that equity matters at all phases, it's disheartening when you have a patient who comes in who has kids and a family, and they've been the backbone of their family and they're taking care of their family, and now they have this advanced breast cancer and they didn't do anything wrong, and the prognosis that comes with that. So how can we take that out of the equation and make it equitable as far as diagnosis and treatment is concerned? And of course, although we're cancer doctors, we would love to not see breast cancer, period. But we know that there are many factors that contribute to why people develop cancer. And so if we're being realistic, an even playing field. And at the end of the day, it is, again, a blessing to have both of you as we fight for equality for all patients who come to Brooklyn Methodist Breast Center. I want to thank you both for joining me on this quest. We were given a job to do, and I think that we have communicated where our hearts are and where we hope to see things progress. So thank you, Dr. Balagan. Thank you, Dr. Taiwo. This is Dr. B coming from New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Breast Center. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to our doctors for joining us and for that powerful conversation. To learn more about breast health at New York Presbyterian, visit www.nyp.org/breast-centers. I'm Courtney Allison. This episode was produced by Andrea Wu and engineered by Ben Chug, who also wrote our music. Sharon Cotlier is our executive producer. For more stories on science, care, and wellness, visit healthmatters.nyp.org.
Thank you.